Hey guys, Andrew here. Just wanted to take a few minutes before this episode to chat about everything that's going on in the world right now. So if you don't want to listen to me talk about COVID-19 for a few minutes, that's totally fine. Skip ahead 5-ish minutes until you hear the intro music. You'll skip all this and it's totally fine. But otherwise, I'm going to take a few minutes here just to talk about everything that's going on. The episode you're about to listen to is with Lauren Urban from D&D Beyond, and she is fantastic. And we did this interview just about 8 days ago by the time you're hearing this. So at that time, Emerald City Comic Con had just been canceled. I had been slated to attend Lauren as well, as she lives in Seattle. And that was one of the things we were going to talk about was, hey, we're going to chat for a call. And then the next day, we're actually going to see each other at con. And at least when we originally booked the call, that was a plan. And obviously, things changed and have been changing very quickly. Even just going back and listening through this episode prior to publishing it today, it's kind of crazy how much things have changed in a week. We've gone from, it's a little weird in Seattle, you know, there's some people sick, things are being canceled, but the country as a whole didn't seem all that concerned. You'll hear me say to Lauren in the episode that I think that things were going to change and give us a new norm for quite a bit of time. And unfortunately, it looks like that is going to be the case. I'm saying all this because I feel like media is often a point of escapism, and rightly so to some degrees, whether you are a big-time TV show or a small-time podcast like myself. Audiobooks, actual books, video games, we often go to those things to escape. But I also feel like, especially in the current world, in the current situation, escape isn't really an option. And we're forcibly having to remove ourselves from society and from each other. And it makes it, I think, more important than ever to talk about what is going on in the world and in our lives. And the fact that there's scary shit going on in the world right now, and we don't know how things are going to look in a month, 2 months, 6 months, 18 months, whatever it might be. But one thing that I've found since I started this show 5 months ago, yesterday, is our capacity for connecting with people, I think, is stronger now more than ever. Our capacity for building friendships off of common ground and common bonds is unparalleled. The things like the internet and Twitter and social media definitely have concerning aspects as far as how we treat and interact with each other, but they also have beautiful opportunities to reach out and connect with people and speak almost face to face with people that we might never know otherwise. None of the guests that I have had on my show up to this point or anyone that I likely would have interacted with had I not decided to buy a microphone and start a podcast. And friendships have been developed and relationships have been built that are all due to technology and the ability to connect with people. And so all that to say, it's weird right now. But even as we are social distancing and isolating, we have the opportunity to reach out. We have the opportunity to encourage each other. We have the opportunity also to escape a bit with media. There's nothing wrong with doing that. I think, like I said, it's important to talk about what is going on, but it's also important to give ourselves space and permission to have a little fun when we can, to find moments of joy if we're feeling down, if we are not feeling down, to spread joy to others. There's no right way to emotionally deal with a global pandemic. I have seen, and I'm sure you've seen too, everything on social media from take this time to learn a new skill, develop a new thing, write that book you always wanted to write, to the opposite end of the spectrum of you don't have to write that book. It's okay to freak out. You don't have to do anything. And you know what? All of that is true. It's about listening to yourself and what you need and doing true self-care. And if you are stuck at home, if you have lost a job, if you are working from home, if you are uncertain of where all this is headed and how you're going to be okay, then you take whatever time you have and you deal with that however you need to. Don't let somebody else online which is ironic with me telling you this right now, but don't let somebody else online tell you how you should cope. I hope that if you feel the need or the desire, that you will reach out to the people around you, that you would reach out to me. I say all the time, my Twitter handles, my email address at the top and the bottom of the show. And I mean it. I'm more than happy to message, to email with anyone who reaches out. Because the reality is, this is going to be going on for a while. Anyway, I don't want to ramble at you guys too much, but I felt the need to say something, really just for myself. I was talking about, you know, how do you need to cope, and I needed to say something. So I hope that you enjoy the episode. It's a really good one. Lauren is so amazing and fantastic, and is such a light in the D&D and online community, and such a joy to chat with. And it was great kind of at the beginning of the really kind of scary stuff here in the US to take, you know, an hour or so and just get to chat with her about games and fun stuff. And so I hope you guys enjoy this. Enjoy the show. Please feel free to reach out. Don't forget to love each other and just, you know, be gentle with yourselves and with those around you. What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Roll for Persuasion, your weekly interview podcast where I chat with creatives in the Dungeons & Dragons and the tabletop RPG community about the cool things they're doing, about the cool work that they've got going on. As always, I have a very awesome guest that I'm very excited to chat with, and we will get to her in just a minute. Let's run through some quick business. If you're listening to the show, there's a good chance that you are already subscribed to us, that you are following on Spotify or paying attention to the show in some way. If you're not, though, if this is your first episode, please make sure to do that. It is free to subscribe. That's pretty cool. So go to your favorite podcast app, hit that star, that download button, whatever that might be. Subscribe to the show. Make sure you don't miss out on any cool episodes. If you listen to us on an Apple device, or you have an Apple device nearby, or your mom has an Apple device, or your neighbor has an Apple device, we appreciate the reviews on Apple Podcasts. So make sure you go on there, leave us a nice review, drop us a nice comment. Be glad to shout you out later. Definitely helps us out. Also, if you are not an Apple user, podchaser.com is a really cool resource, not just for this show, but for any podcast. If you were looking to find some cool podcasts, you can go to podchaser.com and check out a really awesome directory. It's kind of the best way I found to discover new shows, but you can also leave us a review there. So go search for us, podchaser.com, leave a review. That will be a big help. And thank you so much. And this show is very lucky to have several very awesome sponsors, and we will talk about all of them during the episode, but we will start off with awesomedice.com. If you are like me and you play D&D, there is a good chance that you enjoy dice, because who doesn't enjoy dice? I certainly do. I enjoy it a little too much, according to the giant bag sitting on my desk right here, but I've been very excited over the past couple of weeks to be working with the great folks over at awesomedice.com. They have a great selection of all the kind of dice you could want. If you like heavy metal dice, stone dice, your classic kind of Chessex dice, you can go check them out there. They've got great stuff. And if you use the code ROLLPERSUASION at checkout, you save 10%. I get a little kickback. Everybody wins. You support the show by supporting your dice addiction. So make sure you check them out. AwesomeDice.com. Support the show. Code ROLLPERSUASION at checkout. I appreciate it. They appreciate it. Your dice goblin appreciates it too. So let's jump right into it with my guest for this week. I'm very excited because I'm slowly marching my way through the D&D Beyond Heroes cast. We've had Hope Lavelle on previously. You heard Adam Bradford a couple of weeks ago. And excited to have today Lauren Urban. What is going on?
Hi, how's it going? I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to represent the D&D Beyond Heroes crew, I guess.
Yeah, slowly, I'm getting each and every one of you. And then we'll do a massive roundtable and Adam will turn it into a musical production. And it will be a whole thing.
I'm totally okay with this.
100%.
Yeah, we've already talked on Beyond Heroes about doing all sorts of musical stuff. We were talking about basically redoing Moulin Rouge, except in D&D format. It'd be great.
There is nothing wrong with that idea. It is, in fact, a fantastic idea.
I mean, the only thing that's wrong with that is I can't sing, and the character that I'm playing can't really sing, but it'll be fun anyway.
That's when you get the role where the person just kind of talks rhythmically through the whole thing without ever actually having to hit any notes.
Yeah, Yeah, that would be me. That'd right. totally be me. I would love to be in the pit and do instrumental music, but I think that kind of thing would require me to at least try to sing.
Well, just a little bit. I'm sure you can pull it off. We can make it work. Auto-tune is an amazing thing. So, you know, just you go with the whole T-Pain vibe.
Oh, that would be so weird. That'd be really weird to hear myself auto-tuned, especially that I do a gravelly voice for my character. That would be weird.
Oh, man. So your character, so you are a cast member on Beyond Heroes. You are also a member on Demon Plague. You're the DM of Dungeon Drunks. You're the community manager at D&D Beyond. Am I covering everything? Am I missing things? You do a lot.
That's all the D&D stuff. That's the major. I've done other things, but like the current active D&D things, you've covered everything. I also, I am a professional musician by trade, and so I do occasionally play oboe gigs here in the Seattle area, although recently that's been a little more difficult, what with, you know, the virus. But yeah, that is what I do. I do D&D by day and oboe by night.
Well, let's actually, you know, speaking of the virus, because I think we're all going to be speaking about it for a while, so we might as well just acknowledge it. You are in Seattle, which is where I was going to be tomorrow for Emerald City Comic Con, tomorrow when we're recording this.
Yeah, I forgot you were coming. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Well, I'm so sorry for your whole town. How are things going up there?
It's weird. It's very scary to be. It's not scary as much as it is just strange. It's odd to have so many people react to Seattle with a sudden sense of awe and fear because of the news. To be honest, like, most people are fine, everything's okay, but certainly there's been, I think they just put out the alert that people in this area are not supposed to gather in more than groups of 250 anymore. So, like I mentioned, I've had a couple of concerts get canceled. Emerald City Comic Con got canceled. There's usually a whole bunch of stuff happening for St. Patrick's Day. All of that is canceled. It's a lot of things that people look forward to doing that were things that people were going to make money at doing. Like a lot of the people going to Emerald City that were going to have booths, they suddenly that's all just gone. And it's a weird mixture of this is probably the right thing to do health wise, because it's important on all of us to contain this as much as possible so that, you know, we can try to prevent the spread and for anybody who is, you know, try to avoid getting people infected who might be in a population that could be harmed greatly by this. Like, it's the right thing to do. It's good for all of us to be careful. On the other hand, it sucks.
Yeah.
I wanted to go to Emerald City Comic Con this weekend. I want to go see my friends. I wanted to go, you know, patronize all these booths. I wanted all of those geeks to be able to make money doing the thing that they love. So it's very bittersweet.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, we won't spend the whole time talking about the virus, but I think it's going to become something that we're all talking about even more than we are now in the coming weeks. And it's going to kind of be an interesting new reality, especially for those of us in big cities. I'm in Houston, which has had minimal exposure so far, but it's certainly already impacting. We just canceled the rodeo, which is it's an international thing that we have. South by Southwest was just canceled. So it's definitely impacting a lot of us. But it's also, you know, it's an interesting thing because at this time in our lives, like, we have a lot of connection with community via the internet, just like how you and I are talking right now. And it kind of, because we're all having to shelter in place somewhat, it kind of does also give the opportunity to still connect. We're not as isolated as we might have been previously. And you, I think more than many people probably are aware of, you know, the ability that community has to spread on the internet and your role as community manager at D&D Beyond.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, nothing really ever replaces actual human person-to-person interaction. But I think technology is at the point now in where we can come really close. And especially with playing D&D online, which I've been doing for quite a while between my podcast and other things, the technology to be able to do that comfortably in a way that feels as close to being at the table with somebody as anything can, that helps a lot. You know, I literally was just playing this afternoon. Beyond Heroes was just before we did our interview. And once you get set up, once the microphone is going, once, you know, you get past any technical issues, it really can feel like you're just sitting around the table with people because you're seeing them, you're able to look at them eye to eye, you're able to hear the inflections in their voices, you're able to see basically everything that you need to be able to still have that connection. And then every once in a while there's lag. So it's not perfect, but it absolutely helps. And it's been, the other thing that's been interesting, it has been how many people have had to start working from home who had the opportunity or it didn't make any sense to. And now there's been, especially online, I've been seeing a lot of people putting forth, hey, I've been working from home for a while. Here's tips and tricks for those of you who are starting to do it, because it is a change in the routine. There are pitfalls to it that people often don't know about or forget about, especially if it's hopefully a short amount of time that some of these things are a temporary thing. So it's also that opportunity. It's, hey, let me help you out here with your life change, even if it's a temporary one, making this as comfortable as possible, about telling you about the things that can affect you, like the routine change or the issues with having your workspace in the same place as your home space and those lines blurring, about the need to suddenly get outside every once in a while. Yes, we're all here in Seattle trying to be careful about our interactions and be careful about our gathering and be careful about, you know, if anyone's feeling unwell, that they're not spreading any sickness. But yeah, seeing people and getting out of your home is really important for everybody. So that's also been a good thing to see in the community. And especially in D&D, there's so many people now who play online almost exclusively because that's where their friends are, or that's what's the most comfortable for them, or that's the people that they found that play the way that they want to play. You know, for a variety of reasons, they haven't been able to find groups locally and they've been able to find people online, and it's just become a normal way for people to play. I think that's been a nice boon to my community, at least for D&D, that we still have this thing that we love that we don't have to give up doing. We just have to do it in a different way.
Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting that you mentioned kind of like more people having to work from home now. And this is a completely non-D&D tangent. I have worked from home remotely for almost 3 years now. And I'm a big proponent of the value of it. I think that it is an underappreciated option, like in the corporate world. But you're right. There are a lot of pitfalls and there are things that people maybe aren't expecting. Like, as you think about it, you're like, oh, work from home. I don't even have to get dressed. And it's like, oh, you know what? Getting dressed is actually mentally a big step to prepping yourself or working for the day. But my selfish hope is that out of all the weirdness and awfulness of the whole coronavirus thing, is it would be really great if a lot of employers realized, hey, you know what? Our employees work from home and they still get their stuff done.
Yeah.
They're still good employees. Just because, you know, personal rant here, I think that a lot of people, when you have the opportunity to work from home and have a little more control over your environment and maybe see your family a bit more, it makes you a happier, healthier person, makes you a more productive employee, and generally makes the world a better place. So step off my soapbox. that's my opinion.
No, I agree. I think there's a lot of people and a lot of jobs that at least giving the option to.
Sure.
Because working from home does not work for everybody, and it would not work for all jobs. But certainly to have that option and then to allow to give the support to those people so that they can. Yeah, I mean, if you've got horrible commutes, if you've got family, if you've got health issues that make it difficult to get around,
or just
comfort, just, you know, not having to have an office environment all the time. I think there's a bunch of positives to it. But yeah, it's a change. It's difficult. And it takes, you know, when I started working from home, and I still mostly do, when I have gigs, I do have to go out. They haven't figured out virtual orchestras just yet. But, you know, I've always partially worked from home because part of being an orchestral musician is I do so much work before I go to the rehearsal. So I was already used to some of the things that you have to be used to when you do work from home, which is that idea of having your own space that is work separate from your home space, which is super important for your mental well-being, and the understanding of your own mental failings when it comes to being distracted by home things, because when I need to get work done, but the Xbox is right over there, exactly. but my husband is right over there, but the fun yeah. things are right over there. Like right. that can be difficult, and that can be a transition. That's not something that everybody can do immediately or easily. And so, yeah, I agree. Give people the option. And if this, you know, when we come out the other side of this, when if more people have that option and like it, I think that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Fingers crossed. And if you're somebody who is, you know, kind of struggling with that, that very unexpected transition, hit one of us up on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, we're both glad to give, you know, best tips and practices. We've been doing this for a bit. You mentioned streaming, and of course you were involved obviously in the Beyond Heroes and a couple others. How did you get into, let's back up even further than that. How did you get into D&D? And then we'll talk about how you got into streaming D&D, and now your job is D&D. So let's go all the way back.
Oh dear.
We'll play the little flashback music. How did you start playing this game?
So I have a big gap. When I was super, super little, when I was young, the original Redbox came out, and I've always been a geek, and my parents were a geek, and I was an indoor child. I read books, and I was even a musician at a young age, and my parents, in their geeky infinite wisdom, got me the Redbox as a way to help me find friends to play with, because they thought it'd be a really good idea to... You know, because you can't play D&D alone. So here we go. I'll get you this geeky thing. You've read Lord of the Rings and you seem to like all this fantasy stuff. And we've been watching, you know, fantasy TV together. So it was great. Except it was the 80s. The Satanic Panic happened. And sure. everyone that I talked to, first off, it took me a while to learn how to be a social child. And before then, I was very awkward. I'm still awkward. I'm just better at hiding it now. But when I finally was able to ask some people, the answer was either no, that's stupid, or I'd get a yes, and then like they'd ask their parents, and the parents would be like, no, of course you can't play that awful satanic game that's gonna, you know, demons and stuff. So my memory of the Redbox is of me going through the I think it was the Dungeon Master's Guide, but it basically was a choose your own adventure, really tiny little D&D game that you could essentially, you'd pick a character and then it would walk you through, oh, you've walked into a cave and there's a goblin in the cave and it's going to, you know, roll a D20. And if you roll this, it hits you and take this many hit points off. It like kind of walked you through. And I think it was supposed to teach you the mechanics, but I just played through that like 12 times.
Can't play this game by yourself. Challenge accepted.
Exactly. There we go. So instead of playing D&D, I played a bunch of RPGs and read a bunch of fantasy novels and did all of that.
What were your what were the fantasy novels of choice that you were into?
I was doing a lot of David Eddings.
I feel like David Eddings is one of the most underrated fantasy authors.
Right?
Like Belgaria the Sorcerer is probably one of my favorite books of all time.
Yeah. Those two series. I love all of his stuff so yeah. much. I've read, those are still the only hardback books that I've kept is yeah. that whole series. I was deep into that. I read Lord of the Rings. I was reading any Piers Anthony I could get my hands on. Just, you know, I'd go to the bookstore and just find whatever looked cool, because
exactly
that's all you know is, oh, this is cool. And sadly, to this day, I feel bad that I never read any Dragonlance, because I would stand in front of the Dragonlance section, which even in the 80s was huge, was massive,
wildly intimidating. Yeah,
well, that's the thing, like back in the day, trying to figure out what do I read and which one do I start with, and I never could figure it out, and so I'd go grab something else. As much as I was just like, this book with dragons on it and elves and dwarves.
But you don't want to like start in the middle and be like, oh, I'm not getting any of this because I missed the first five books or whatever.
Right. So to this day, I'm sad that I never had the courage to be like, I'll just take this one. So yeah, so I've always been that geek, and definitely RPGs in my video game life have been a big deal. And when I was in college, I played a couple of games. They weren't D&D, but they were tabletop RPG kind of stuff, mostly Star Wars. I was in a dorm that had a group who on Saturday nights would take over the lounge and play a hardcore Star Wars almost LARP. I remember walking in and they would be in Jedi outfits and have the plastic lightsabers. And there would be a couple pieces of paper and pencil around, but it was more like play acting than anything.
Like live action theater kind of thing.
It was super cool. And I could never,
that's awesome.
I could never join them full time because they would do it on Saturdays. And I was a professional musician, or I was a college musician. So what would happen is they would
always play.
Yeah. Saturday nights. So they would start at like 6 o'clock and go until 2 o'clock in the morning, but it was in my dorm. So I'd go play a concert or do a rehearsal or something. And I would be the person to like show up with pizza or show up with snacks. And then every once in a while, they'd have me play an NPC. But it was so much fun. I loved it so much. And then more and more years went by. And I was living in Ohio. I was finishing up. I'd left school. I'd finished school. And I'd gone out into the professional world. And then I'd gone back to school for a variety of reasons. And I was in Ohio. And the Acquisitions Incorporated podcasts had started to come out in fourth edition when Chris Perkins went out and was DMing for that crew. And it was all audio podcasts because they were doing the build up to fourth edition, or they just put out fourth edition. It was very early, early. And so this was one of the ways that they were promoting it. And he was doing so he was doing that regular series. And then he went to he did a short stream with the Robot Chicken guys. And I remember Loading Ready Run did a, when it was still the D&D Next, it was the playtest stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or actually that was fifth edition. So anyway, yeah, it was, Acquisitions Incorporated. And I'm listening to these podcasts. I'm like, this sounds like so much fun. I want to play this. And then in fourth edition, Wizards put out a version of the Red Box for fourth edition. And this was once again, really early. This was like 2010, 11, I think. So I was finishing up school and I decided I was moving from Ohio to Seattle because my now husband, then boyfriend at the time, was living in Vancouver, Canada. And I had friends in Seattle. I'd been to PAX a couple of times. Seattle seemed like a really fun place. And I'm like, I'm going to move out there. I've got a friend I can move in with. I'm going to go find a job. I'm going to go find gigs. And the one thing I let myself buy was the Red Box. And I found a local store that was running the weekly games that it wasn't Adventures League. I don't remember what it was called at the time. And I found a bunch of people to play with. And that's, yeah. So Chris Perkins got me into D&D. It was listening to him do the podcast and I started playing.
And now you fast forward, you play in streaming games. You were streaming today. I don't know if you were streaming D&D yesterday, but you were streaming yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when, at what point did you make the transition from the table to the screen?
So I would play on a regular basis for a couple years, and I'm a fan of Rooster Teeth, who are the company that put out Red versus Blue and a bunch of stuff now. But at the time it was just Red versus Blue, and a bunch of us who had been friends through Rooster Teeth for a very long time. We were attending their annual convention in Austin, Texas. And there's a nonprofit that partnered up with them called SideQuest that would, the day before the convention, do a fancy, it was a fancy fundraiser. You'd dress up in fancy clothes and go to the Four Seasons. And it was a fundraiser for charity, usually like Child's Play and Operation Supply Drop and things like that. And it was community driven. So community members would donate stuff and then there'd be a silent auction during this fancy schmancy cocktail hour kind of thing. And I was super poor. We were all super poor because I'm still, you know,
starving musician kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, the cliche. So I didn't have anything to offer. And there's only so much oboe you can offer someone, but I've been playing D&D and I had a bunch of friends who wanted me to run a game while we're at the convention. Cause you know how conventions are, you go during the day and then the evenings, unless there's like an event, you kind of have the evening to yourself. So I said, you know, I'll run a D&D game for charity. And so that's what I put into the silent auction is I said, you know, the top four people on this day at the end of the day will go and I'll run you a one shot. And we raised a little bit of money and it was great. And we found a corner and a bunch of us played and it was super fun. And the next year we did it again, but instead of the instead of bidding to be in the game, you could bid to affect the game. So I got a couple friends together, and then people could bid to, it was still fourth edition at the time, so there wasn't advantage and disadvantage, but that's essentially what it was. You could bid to give people certain items, and essentially you could affect the game that way. And a couple of the friends that I had in the game were some lifelong friends of mine who we had a ton of fun, and we're like, we should do this again next year. We raised a little more money. And so then the third year we came back and we actually got, instead of it being outside of the convention, we actually got a panel room. And so we're going to put on this live D&D game in front of an audience, which had started to happen. This was back in like 2015, 2016. So Acquisitions Incorporated transitioned to being on stage, right. And yeah. there was more stuff in person. And so we ran this game, and it was the same kind of thing. The charity was, you got to play the boss monster, you got to affect the game in certain ways. But I put together this team of four of my old friends from this community, and we're going to play this 2-hour game. And it was a tiny little room, but we packed it. It was great, and we had a ton of fun, and we raised a bunch of money. And then afterwards, for the rest of the convention, not only were there a bunch of people who were like, hey, so are you going to do that again? Are you going to do that some more? Where can we listen to you do this some more? Because I'd been doing some podcasting stuff. So people were like, oh, you're going to do some, you just turn this into a podcast. And then the four friends that I had on the panel were like, this is really fun. We should keep playing. So after the convention, we chatted for a while. It's like, all right, yeah, well, I'll run a campaign for you. We're all podcasters in a way, so we'll record it and put it out there. It'll just be a fun thing that we'll start to do. And that was Dungeon Drunks, which at the time was called Dungeons and Dragons and Drunks, because that's what the panel was called.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Later we changed the name because, you know, ampersands and things.
Right.
Make it a little bit shorter. And so that was Jack and John and Jonathan and Jules, because I only apparently play with people with a J name.
You have a type, apparently. Yeah.
For podcasts, apparently. I don't know.
Sure.
So yeah, so we just started playing, and that turned into an ongoing campaign. I'd moved to Seattle, and it turned into, all right, I'm playing in this one game, but I'm running this other game. And the podcast was doing really well. We were having a bunch of fun. And then Wizards of the Coast is here in Seattle. And Greg Tito, who works for them and does Dragon Talk, and he's amazing. He's just an incredible force in the D&D community and works for Wizards. And he put out a tweet that Dragon Talk at the time was just still a podcast. And he put out a tweet asking for guest recommendations, and people suggested me. And I think they suggested me because I'm local. And so it was, sure. it wasn't like, hey, you should talk to Lauren. It was, hey, you should talk to Lauren. She's right there. It'll be easy.
Right.
Like, and so he asked. So I ended up on Dragon Talk with him and Shelley, and we had a lot of fun. And through that amazing time and that relationship, I started meeting some of the other people at Wizards of the Coast, and they had started to transition away from some of their shows just being podcasts to being a streamed show. They were starting up Dice Camera Action. They were starting to put out these other shows. They were getting into streaming, and I got asked to run a game for them because they wanted the DM to stay local, and they wanted to have more shows that were native to their channel. And that's basically how it started. I've never been a streamer myself. I've done the podcasting thing, but as far as streaming, I've, by the good graces of a lot of awesome people, just ended up on a lot of really cool streams with amazing people who are willing to do a lot of work so that I can show up and talk and be on camera for a little bit. So I've been super, super lucky. And that just rolled, just kept going.
Just snowballed, until kept building and building.
It just built and built and built. And I was then helping out when they expanded their suite of shows on the D&D channel. I was working as a moderator for them for a while. And that's how I got into working for the community. And then that's how Adam Bradford and Todd Kenrick found me, because I was already doing that for D&D. And they were looking for a community manager. And here I am.
In a nutshell, that's a pretty cool journey. And here you are. Yeah.
It's strange and wonderful, and I feel a little bad every once in a while. Someone asks, "Yeah, I'd really like to get into like what you do for a living. How'd you get into what you do for a living?" I'm like, "Oh,
no, you fall ass backwards into it. You get really lucky." Yeah,
kinda. Yeah, like don't follow me. I don't know how I did it.
It's very true. A lot of people that I talk to, or people big in the community, or really kind of any entertainment venue that you hear talking about how they got to where they are. I mean, there's always a lot of hard work and intentionality. But a lot of it's just happenstance. And so that can be discouraging because you're like, oh, maybe that'll never happen to me. But also it's kind of like, okay, well, luck is the ultimate equalizer. So maybe I just need to, you know, trip over something and end up on a stream too. So, but it's kind of cool. I can imagine for you looking back, you know, reading books and playing as a kid and going from everyone saying, no, we're not going to play that demon game with you to like, hey, would you please come and run the demon game for us? Not bad.
The best thing about it is up until this job, my dream job was always something in music. And I'd done some other jobs that I enjoyed. I actually did radio in a little bit when I lived in Florida for a couple of years, and I did some radio there. And I thought this is kind of fun, but never have I had a full-time job that I took on that I said, yeah, I could do this as my career and be just as happy if, you know, instead of being a professional musician. And I'll never give up the oboe. I will always play. But the reality of classical musicians is that the vast majority of us are freelancers who cobble together work here and there and are often either teaching as well, or they have other full-time jobs. The number of people who make a full-time living as a professional classical musician is tiny, tiny, tiny. So the fact that I've been able to find this job in something else that I love, with people that I admire and love, doing things that I love just as much as playing the oboe, is I can't begin to describe how lucky I am.
That's great. And I think that is the dream for lots of people, is to find that kind of joy and fulfillment.
Exactly.
Not just in their lives, but in what they do to, you know, provide the means with which to live. So that's pretty great.
Yeah, and I wish I had better advice for how to get into and out of it. I will say the only advice that I feel like I am qualified to give is to be open to opportunities that are maybe outside of your sphere of influence.
Absolutely.
That are not anything you think you're trained for or anything that you think that you can do, but that sound fun. Give it, if you're being offered an opportunity, give it a try if you can, because you might find something that you love just as much.
Yeah, an adventurous spirit goes a really long way. Well, let's take a real quick break to talk about someone else with an adventurous spirit, and that is my sponsor. That's a good segue right there.
Ooh.
My sponsor.
I like it.
Which is Talon and Claw. As you guys know, each and every week, I love to talk about them because they are awesome. Anthony is cooking up some cool stuff. Also, in the state of Washington, actually, in your backyard, I think he's about 20-ish minutes from Wizard, so not far from your area. Anthony makes custom handmade wooden dice accessories, so dice vaults. He makes some really amazing DM screens. So if you're a DM, or if you have a DM in your party that you want to really just surprise and delight, check out talonandclaw.etsy.com and see some of the cool stuff Anthony is working up in the shop. He has some sweet new leather dice rolling trays. I know he's got some other cool projects on the horizon that he hasn't announced yet, but I know are coming, and they're pretty cool. So make sure you go check them out. If you just want something cool and sweet to store your dice and store your miniature in, he makes some really great things. So talonandclaw.etsy.com. You can, of course, use the code ROLLPERSUASION. You'll save 10% on your order. And again, you support the store. It's a running theme we have here. I'm a big fan of it, but I'm also a big fan of Talon and Claw stuff. I have a dice vault right in front of me. I'm going to be ordering some more stuff from them here soon. So make sure you check them out. They are part of what lets me bring the show to you guys each and every week. talonandclaw.etsy.com. Check him out on social media as well. Really active on Twitter if you want to reach out to Anthony. He's always happy to talk. And Lauren, are you a dice collector? Are you a dice person? Or are you a...
I'm definitely a dice person. I wouldn't say I'm a collector as I look over at my... So I do have a collection, but what's happened is I've managed to get a hold of some really nice metal and stone dice, and it's soured me forever on plastic.
Yeah,
I really like
that.
That
is the struggle.
And I'm not one of those people who likes to display dice, so I feel like I've given away a lot of dice because I feel like if I'm not going to use it, then I want to give it to somebody else who can. Like, I don't want to display sets. So if I'm not actively using it, so for someone in my job and someone who does have what I think is a lot of dice, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I've got like 8 sets, I think. And
that's reasonable.
Yeah. A collection of D6s, because, you know, everybody needs a collection of D6s. I play with all of them in various ways, in various games. Some are used all the time. I have a set that my husband got for me many, many, many years ago. That was my first heavy metal set, from some place in PAX West. It wasn't one of the dice places that we normally know of right now. I don't even know where he got it, but it's this awesome heavy metal silver set that I love, that I basically use all the time. I'm also one of those people who I use like 1 or 2 sets in a game. I don't have like 10 sets. So when I have to roll, unless I'm playing a rogue and I am a level 20 rogue and I need all those D6s, I will just roll a D6 5 or 6 times in order to get what I need.
Sure.
So, yeah. So that's why I have what I would like to think is a very controlled collection.
It's a curated. Yeah.
I guess curated, sure. But I have spent a significant amount of money on many of those sets. I am a fan of level up dice. Not to plug another dice set on your stream.
Oh, but no. Do you have the, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to. Do you have the special sapphire?
I do not.
Fantastical.
I've played with them. They're gorgeous.
Yeah.
I do know friends who have them, but like I said, I'm not a fan of, like, you can play with them. You definitely, absolutely. They're a gorgeous aluminum set. They did something really nice with that sapphire. It's like inset, so you don't have to worry about when you roll it. But it's kind of a display set.
Sure. Yeah. Good point.
So I did not buy that. But it is gorgeous. And the vast majority, as I look over there once again, yeah, the vast majority of what I have are especially their heavier metals and a couple of their stone that I have that are really, they're gorgeous and they're fun to play with. So
I'm somewhat the same way. I love owning lots of dice, but when it comes to actually playing, I really only have a couple of sets that I tend to roll in a game. The Opalite set from Critical Role, their Whitestone set, is kind of my go-to for the game. But I also have some metal ones that I like as well. My wife has an interesting dice tactic, because I am like, yeah, give me all the dice. Yeah, I have never seen anyone who makes a character as like intentionally and like creatively as she does. I mean, we're talking pages and pages of backstory. You know, the miniature is very specific. Everything about the characters, she often will homebrew different things about the character just because she feels like some of what 5e offers is too limiting. But every die in the set, from the, you know, D4 to the D20, is like a special, you know, kind of like semi-precious stone dice from one of the vendors online, you know, specifically set to match part of her character's personality. And she only rolls those dice for that character. And so I think it's fun that everyone has a different way they can roll their dice. You know,
absolutely.
It's fun.
Yep. I'm also one of those people, I don't care if other people touch my dice or roll my dice. I'm not superstitious about my dice.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I have been cleaning my dice, right. But that's soap and water cleaning. But no, I've also, up until Beyond Heroes, never had a set that I've used for a specific character. And I didn't go out to buy a set for the character. I just found it was a level up set that I was like, oh, well, this is perfect. And it's just become of the two sets that I use when I play my Dragonborn and Beyond Heroes, it's one of the two sets. So, I have a curated taste in dice, but I also would like to think that, like, yeah, you know, I'm the first to be like, here, try my dice, here, play yeah, with, go yeah. for it. But I know there's some people like, don't touch, don't look at, do not, you know, or they have dice jail. I don't do dice jail.
They're plastic, they're metal. It's just gravity and physics.
And you know what? If people want to have that kind of ritual in their D&D, it's awesome. And I've seen some fabulous dice jails and everything. But that's, for me, I just roll them because they're pretty and I like them. And if they roll badly, well, that's the universe right there.
Part of the game. Yeah. Mm. So rolling on a streaming game, because let's be honest, not everyone is the most honest person in the world. Is there ever a temptation when you're in, because for me, even playing in a home game, when I'm in like a heavy story moment where I'm like, man, if I pass this check, it's going to be such a big moment in the game. And there's that like, oh, I wish I could fudge this roll. Is that temptation even bigger when you're streaming, or does that just like never cross your mind?
It's never crossed my mind, though there was one very specific role that happened that I was in the moment so scared people were going to thought that I was lying. I actually grabbed the camera. Not like it actually, like in hindsight, it's not like this actually proves anything, but the role happened and I literally, my thought was no one's going to believe this. Actually, I rolled a natural 20 in a moment that basically saved my character's life. I grabbed the camera to show the dice, and hindsight, I'm like, well, that, yeah, that doesn't prove anything. But I, that's really the only time that I've ever thought about the honesty of a role, because yeah. I feel like, and I trust all of my players for my players for Dungeon Drunks, because we play online. I trust everybody else in Beyond Heroes. I trust, you know, all of my DMs, because I feel like it's not fun to fudge those roles, because you end up second guessing yourself. Like it's more than just the dishonesty of, well, I've rolled something, but now I'm going to say something else. But it's, you are now making a decision that is not necessarily up to you. You know, if you're rolling for something, the fun of that is you're leaving the final decision up to either chance or the DM. And in most cases, the DM, like in a lot of those roles. And I trust my DMs. I trust them to be storytellers enough to give me, even when I roll badly or even when I roll something and it's not the role that I wanted or that my character wanted, that it's still going to be an engaging story moment. And I trust them enough to trust them with whatever the role is. So no, I don't think of, you know, I don't think it's any fun to do any of that. But I did have that one moment where I rolled really well and I'm like, no one will believe me. So
you have to see this. I promise it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. It literally saved my character's life. She would have died. So it was one of those moments.
But like you were saying, even if she had that, you know, some of the best story moments in D&D come from natural ones or from bad rolls that feel like a gut punch in the moment because you as the player wanted something different.
Yeah.
But while you're telling your own story, you're also telling the story that happens naturally through the dice. And so, you know, it could have been a whole other kind of crazy thing if your character had died.
Absolutely. And to be honest, in that moment when I was rolling, it was not that I was expecting her to survive. To give the TLDR, we were in a battle with an Elder Brain and it had legendary actions. And I'm the cleric in the game and it's an Elder Brain, so it knew it had to take me out. And so every single time that it had a chance, it was using its legendary actions to attack me. And so it downed me pretty quick. And then once I was downed, it continued to hit me. And I had a chance to roll a single death saving throw before it would have another chance to do a legendary action. So basically, I was going to roll a death saving throw. And whether I succeeded or failed, the next thing that was going to happen is it was going to hit me again. I was going to die. So when I was preparing to roll, I wasn't thinking I was going to roll a natural 20 and have one hit point again. What I was thinking is, this is going to decide whether I'm about to narrate my own death now or in 6 seconds.
Right.
That's basically, and so that's what I was letting the dice decide. And then the number no one was expecting came up. And that was also amazing. And like, I think, you know, like I couldn't imagine making that number up. I could not imagine lying in that moment and saying, I rolled a natural 20. That would feel so weird to me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. A lot of manufactured emotion that for what would genuinely be a really emotional moment.
And I think people can tell. I think over the internet even, you know, people who are watching a D&D game, people can tell when you're faking it. People can tell. And not just in D&D. So I think that's another reason, you know, it's not quite as important as the, I trust my players and I trust my DM, so I'm going to tell you what the actual role is. But I think people can tell when you're making it up as, you know, when you're faking it, essentially. We're all making it up as we go along. But when you're faking it, and so having those real reactions, I keep pointing over here as though my dice tray is over here. This is where I normally roll, right here. It's
the,
right there.
The metaphorical dice tray.
Exactly. And so whether you're using like an online dice roller or physical dice or something, an app on your phone, whatever it is that you're using, I think that's part of the beauty of the game is that surprise for yourself as well as other people.
Absolutely.
Wow, that was a tangent. Sorry.
No, that's this show. I think even in the original show description, I think I wrote that the roll for persuasion is 50% tangents, 50% conversation. So you're just living up to my, you know, original vision for the podcast. So thank you for that.
Excellent. That's what I aim to do is live up to expectations.
you're nailing it. Oh, man. Okay, so let's talk about D&D Beyond and community managing and all of that,
yeah.
Because Adam mentioned, and you kind of touched on it too, when he was on a couple weeks ago, he said, he was like, Lauren, we went out, we got her. Like, we saw what she was doing in the community, and we went out and got her to make her part of this team. So what was that like for you? Like, being contacted and then kind of being like, oh, this is going to be my job? Okay, what was that like?
It was surprising. I had zero idea. I got I think he called me. Like, we had been in contact a little bit because we had met at the stream that D&D puts on every year during the summer, the live event. We had met
there. Stream of Many Eyes or something.
Yeah, so that would have been I think that was the Stream of Annihilation. No, it would have been after that. It would have been the next one. Anyway, I met him there, and James Hake also lives here in Seattle, and we had both gone to PAX West and gone to the Acquisitions Incorporated live game, and Adam was there because I think he was in town visiting Wizards or something, and so we had approached and like reintroduced ourselves, hey, how you doing, blah blah blah, and then so he had my contact information, and then to me, out of the blue, I got this message a couple of months later of I'm back in town. I was hoping to grab dinner with you and chat with you about some business. I was like, okay. And at the time, I was doing the moderation for the Wizards of the Coast channel for all their D&D streams for a while. And I knew D&D Beyond had been doing some streaming that we were hosting. So I thought in a weird way it had something to do with that. And so I met up with him, and Todd Kenrick came, and that's when he said, yeah, we want to offer you this job. We've been looking for someone to take over. At the time, it started with just social media for a couple of months with the idea that it would naturally transition into community management. So I was contracted with them for a little bit and then got hired on full time. And they were literally looking for someone to be able to take over doing all that social media, because it's a lot for a business, and that can be, you know, Adam was trying to run the company and Todd was trying to create all of this content and promote D&D Beyond and doing all these interviews, and like they just didn't have the time to do this, and they saw me essentially doing that for I wasn't running their Twitch or their Twitter, but I was running their Twitch. So it was super surprising and really flattering, and then incredibly daunting, because it was like, I think I know how to do this, but I've never done this before.
Right, yeah.
I guess it's time to learn really, really fast. And so, yeah, the two of them were a huge help in those. Well, still, they're still a huge help. They're still on a daily basis. I talk to both of them and am like, help me with this, or can you give me advice on this, or anything. But especially in those first couple of months of, all right, what's the tone that the business is going for? What's the, what do we want to do? What do we want to do about this? How do we want to approach that? What's our schedule? What's this? How do we want to, you know, and finding out from them how they wanted the business to be portrayed and interactions with the community. And then asking me, you know, what makes the most sense? How do we, you know, because especially for a while, D&D Beyond was not accepted very well. Want their paper and their pencils, or they remember, you know, other versions of online digital tool sets that did not work, that failed. And so there was a lot of goodwill that they worked really hard to build up. And I kind of inherited a company that people were already coming around to. And so my job was just to continue to basically talk to the community and be like, we are geeks and passionate people first and fans first, and then also running a business. So, you know, it was exciting, but daunting for sure. There were a lot of days where I sat in front of the computer going, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? Nobody, I'm an oboist. I should not open my mouth. What's going on? So yeah, I was very lucky to have a lot of help and a lot of support. I took over coordinating a moderator team that didn't need any coordination. They were already way on top of things, and they still are. I basically just help out and guide and offer suggestions. But they were already, I basically walked into a company already doing the job, and I said, okay, how can I help you continue to do an awesome job?
So what is like the day-to-day life for a community manager? Because I feel like it's a thing that those of us in the community are aware exist, and we're especially aware of it when something goes wrong and we need someone to bitch to. But I think, have you seen the show Mythic Quest that recently came out on Apple TV? It's got like Ashley Birch, and
I've heard of it, but I haven't had a chance to.
Really good. I highly recommend it. There's a character in there who, it's based off of a long story short, like a World of Warcraft-esque MMORPG. And one of the characters in there is the community manager for the game. You know, so there's lots of jokes about all the emails and like terrible things she receives. But I feel like for the most part, fans don't have exposure to what being a community manager is, even in media until the show. So what's your day like? Like what are you dealing with on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I'll say my day today and in the past couple of weeks is way different than it was even a year ago when I had this job.
Significantly more hand sanitizer.
Well, yeah, that too. But that's just, you know, now I just wake up and bathe in a vat of hand sanitizer. Absolutely.
Exactly, yeah.
No, so the interesting thing about community management is it's different for every single company. So what I will tell you my job is right now, what is different than what it was a year ago, and is way different than any other, I think, community manager in the D&D community, and then probably way different than, say, video game community management. So my main job is I am the communication point between a lot of people. And the easy answer is like the community and the devs. But it's a little more than that, because sometimes I'm the communication point between like marketing and the devs. And sometimes I'm the communication point between this specific part of our community and the moderators. And sometimes it's the moderators and the community. And it's a lot of me bouncing back and forth between a lot of different people and facilitating things. So my primary responsibilities are I am in charge of the social media, which a year ago was me, but now I have a social media person. So Twitter, Facebook, bits of our Discord, anything that we put out on social media when we're promoting articles, videos, content updates to the site, news and announcements, those kind of things. And then any replies on any of those social media. So if you see something go up on social media, or if you've added us for some reason, or if you've direct messaged us and you've been replied to, that's either me or my social media person. And a lot of that is either informational. It's me essentially taking information from either the devs or the content team and passing that along to the community, or it's we're replying to people, where a lot of the time we're sending people to customer service or answering questions if we can. So there's that social media. I help manage the moderator team, which, as I mentioned, are awesome and don't really need a lot of hands-on. And but our moderator team, they are the moderators on our forums, on our Discord, on Twitch, on YouTube, any place that we are interacting with the community, that they can ask questions, that we are trying to foster a place in where people can come and talk to other people and ask questions and joke around and have fun, but feel like when the asshole comes on in, we're going to take care of it. And for us, it's the vast majority of that job is answering questions, to be honest. Like, the D&D community in general is wonderful. And part of that is because I think we're playing a game and where it involves a lot of personal interaction. and people in general, when you like playing with other people, have a desire to be nice to other people and to get along with other people. So unlike, say, in the video game world, where people can be very nasty and toxic, or in other communities where the thing that they are attached to is not playing with other people, it's watching a thing or playing a game that is a versus game. Our community, what they're attached to is that interpersonal interaction, or they're attached to watching other people have that interpersonal interaction. So I'm super lucky in where my community is already awesome. And so my moderators, their job is 90% of the time passing along information, telling people homebrew questions that come up for our site a lot of the time. Where can people go for more information? Offering suggestions. It's really being a helpful hand more than
kind of like a concierge almost.
Yeah, a little bit of that. A little bit of the Q&A person. A little bit of a friend who knows a lot more than you do, and you can go to and get questions answered. And then, yeah, every once in a while, we've got to ban somebody. But really, the vast majority of their information is, or their job is informational. And so my job as the community manager is bring new moderators on when we have moderators. We've been very lucky. We've had moderators who've been hired on as full time in a bunch of different ways. And so my job is to bring on new moderators. They're all NDA'd and they are in our business Slack. And it is to give them as much information as possible so that they can then help our users, because no one person can be everywhere on social media or on the internet. And so it is making sure that they have all the tools they need to be able to answer questions, so they're not blindsided by things. It's filling them in. So a lot of my job is then talking to the devs and passing along information to them. A lot of my job is outreach. I go, when there are conventions, I go to conventions. I am on 3 billion Discords. I sit around in Twitch chats. I look at forums and Reddit, and I'm on Twitter, and I'm out there actively looking for people who are asking questions, getting a sense of what people want, getting a sense of what people are upset about, what people are happy about, and passing along that information, or telling those people who are upset, here's how you can submit your feedback. It's a lot of finding the place where people need information and finding where that information is and passing it along. And so some days my job is to wake up in the morning and read through the Discord and read through Reddit and sit in Twitch chat for 5 to 6 hours a day and go find other Twitch chats, not just the D&D channel, but, you know, Encounter Roleplay or Scraticus or the Grimjack's channel, or, you know, just, or maybe there's a new channel that's come up. It's to watch shows on YouTube. It's to answer emails and go on to Twitter and answer questions on Twitter or just joke around with people. It's a lot of it is really just to listen to people and to talk to people, and then to be the person that can be like, I know the answer to that question, or I don't know the answer to that question, but let me get it for you. Or I don't know the answer to that question, but if you go over here, they can answer that for you. So it's a lot of that. It's a lot of, and so I kind of laughed when you said, what's your day to day? Because my day to day is different every single day. You know, today my day was, I had a couple of posts. We did an update about Briv got put into Idle Champions, which is Idle Champions is awesome. Dungeons and Dragons game on a bunch of platforms. I love their game. Our characters are ending up in there. We're working. That's a relationship we have with that company. That's awesome. And so it was making sure that we're doing all the right promotion for that. It's filling people in on stuff that's going on. I played D&D for 2 hours, which is part of my job, which is weird. Technically what we're doing right now, right here, this is part of my job.
Community outreach. That's exactly what we're doing.
Sometimes it involves a lot of research, looking into how to effectively manage back end really boring things. you know, not very interesting things, but that are important. I look at statistics for where people are going on our site and what excites them and interests them. I do a lot of consulting with the devs when we're planning on new features that are coming out, or prioritizing, you know, of the community. Do you think they'd be more interested if we do this or this? So, yeah, it's a lot of just being available and reading a lot and saying, I don't know, but I can find that out. That was a long rambling answer. Did I actually answer that question?
No, that's yeah, you did. That's the you answered not just what your average day is like. You answered what any given day is like. And that's really cool. You're an enabler of communication and, you know, like you said, answer of questions and enabler of other people, like with your mod team and social media. That's really cool. And you mentioned and Adam's talked about this, and he and I spoke about this when we did his episode. That the community in general is really great and really understanding. And like you said, because a lot of us are playing this game that is really centered around interpersonal connection. And one of the things I mentioned to him was that several months ago, you guys had one of, if not the only kind of like outage of the service for a couple of days. And I mentioned him, and I think I tweeted this at the time, that like you in particular were doing a great job of interacting with people and kind of, you know, spreading information and making sure that people felt heard and seen, and you know that you and the team understood that like we wanted to be able to play our game, and you guys were also upset and dealing with it. So what is it like in those moments, which again have been very few and far between with D&D Beyond, but when something quote unquote goes wrong or breaks, and now suddenly you're not just managing questions and interactions, but you're handling people who are confused and don't understand why they can't do the thing they're expecting to do.
More than that, they can't access the thing they paid for. Like, that's sure,
yeah.
Like, it sucks when we can't play D&D. We've all experienced, you know, a game gets canceled, or, you know, someone's sick, or, you know, my car breaks down, or the internet doesn't work, or whatever. Now we can't play D&D, and that sucks. But D&D in the end is like, we can, it's okay. My life will still go on without D&D. However, if you've paid for something, which is, you know, now that's your livelihood, and this is what you've decided to pay for, and now you can't access the thing you paid for, that sucks. And that's really, like, I understand people who get upset when they can't access their content online. And so, yeah, that weekend sucked. I appreciate your kind words about it. It wasn't just me working on that. That was, once again, a team. I had my social media person, and I had all of the forum mods. And we just kind of split up the internet. I sat on Discord and kept an eye on Twitter and Facebook, but Twitter and Facebook was Melly, my social media person. I was sitting on Discord. I was also looking at Reddit and a couple other places. The mods were taking care of the forums. And then it was literally just finding out from the devs what they're doing. You know, what do you feel comfortable saying at this point? Where are we at this point? And passing along whatever information I could that made sense, because you don't necessarily want to be passing along they're working on it all the time, because of course they're working on it. But, you know, right. And we don't give any ETAs, because the last thing you do, you give an ETA and then that people are waiting. You know, if I say, oh, this will be fixed by 9 o'clock, then everybody at 9 o'clock piles on. And of course, it's not fixed by 9 o'clock. So it's a lot of giving as much information as we know. And yeah, so it was spending that weekend just saying, you know, felt bad, because in a lot of ways there wasn't much we could do. It was a lot of saying, we absolutely know, yes, this sucks, yes, we're all working on it. I promise, as soon as I have any concrete information, I'm not going to fluff you. I'm going to tell you as soon as we know, yes, this works, or no, it doesn't. I'm going to give you updates as soon as I've got anything concrete to tell you, that it's going to get posted everywhere. And that's really all you can do in those situations, is pass along whatever information makes the most sense and apologize for it being down and hope that, you know, the problem is something that can be quickly fixed. And I know that weekend sucked for all of us, and the devs did an amazing job. I mean, we were on break at the time. We were on winter vacation, and it was the weekend. So it was doubly difficult for everybody, because everyone had to suddenly be on call on, you know, it had been fine for months, years, been fine all throughout the break, and then all of a sudden no one could access their characters and no one could play, and it hurt. It sucked for everybody, but you know, they worked amazingly hard, and I just kept passing that along. And I think it was important that we were honest, and it was important that we didn't try to fluff anything, that we weren't like, oh, it'll be fixed soon, it'll be, no, we're figuring out what's going on. We're really sorry, as soon as I've got any concrete information from you. And people were angry, but as I said, rightfully so. They couldn't play the game that they wanted to play, and they couldn't access the stuff they wanted to access. So we fixed that as quickly as we could. And then it has been an ongoing goal since then to make sure that never happens again.
Well, and when you talk about, you know, kind of the steps that you take of, you know, everybody split up the internet, you take this corner, I'll take this corner, let's communicate things. You make it sound very easy, at least from the sense of like, oh, these are the steps you take. But so many brands, and obviously actually doing it is difficult, but so many brands get that wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to say, like, a lot, you know, and being someone involved in a lot of different tech and online media, like, they're just companies that don't handle that well. And so it's easy, I think, for us to listen and hear you kind of describe, oh, these are the steps you take, but actually doing them, I mean, that's very commendable on y'all's part. Because when, you know, a company is forthright and says, hey, yeah, you know what, this does suck, we're with you, and we're all people too, we didn't want to work on vacation weekend, and we're here because there's a problem. And I think that increases then future trust on the part of the consumer, at least for me. I'll speak for me. Because you know that, you know, if something goes wrong, you're not alone. Like, yeah, the thing you paid for, you can't access it, but it's not because someone doesn't care, or it's not because someone's, you know, just giving you the finger and saying, deal with it. Sometimes things go wrong. And so as a consumer, having a company that steps up and says, hey, we're here, we're working on it, we're going to sit on Discord with you, and every time I have an update, I'm going to give it to you. And so, you know, I'm not withholding anything, like that goes a long way towards engendering trust. And so, you know, hats off to you. Sorry that was a rough weekend. As a user, you know, I appreciate the work you guys put in.
Well, thank you. And as I said, it was a giant team effort, and a lot of it was just, you know, I think it was us saying, well, if we were on the other side of this, what would we want? You know, and I think most reasonable people, that they just want to know, oh, okay, especially with something on the internet, a lot of what it is was people coming saying, hey, I can't access your site. Is that me or you? And just having the reply wherever they had asked us to be like, nope, it's us. This
it's not you, it's
me. We're working on it. We will. Well, because I think we've all had that moment on the internet where something doesn't work. We can't access a website.
Right,
we can't log into something. And a lot of the time our first instinct is, oh, shit, what happened? Did my internet go out?
Yeah.
Is the web page not loading? Did my computer? You know, it's immediately it's on us. And so, you know, half that battle was just, nope, this is not you. This is not anything going on with you. This is our site is having issues. And here's how you will know when it's fixed. And we're sorry. And it sucked in a lot of ways that we couldn't do anything more for many of that. But I thought we all thought it was really important to just have that moment. If you're going to take the time to go online and at us on Twitter and say, hey, I can't access your site, literally the least we can do is to reply and say, yeah, we know, we're having problems, we're sorry, we'll tell you as soon as it's fixed. So it felt like the right thing to do. And listen, I am never going to complain about anyone trying to do social media or customer service online. It is not easy. Communicating in text is incredibly hard. It is super easy to slip up one word and to have your meaning be misconstrued. It is something that is on a regular basis on my mind, of making sure that, how do I communicate this in text effectively and not sound like a robot? So I feel like that is, I have nothing but sympathy for any company that goes through that. And yeah, we just try to do the best we can. And I have an awesome team. I have the moderator crew that I got is amazing. And yeah, I will take your thanks and pass it on to them, because they did a chunk of that work because, yeah, you can't be everywhere on the internet.
Well, props to all of them and to all of you. Let's jump real quick as we're kind of coming to a close here. I want to give another shout out to our third and final, and I'm not going to say favorite because I love all my sponsors, but one of my favorite, my very first kind of supporter, one of the very first guests on my show, Smuggler's Coffee. Are you a coffee drinker? I see you holding a mug right now.
I am. I got tea in here, but I am. I think I do have some of Smuggler's Coffee, too.
They've been at GaryCon and yeah, lots of other kind of conventions. Yeah, so big fan of Smugglers here on the show. They make delicious barrel-aged coffee beans. That means they're dumping these coffee beans into whiskey barrels and rum and brandy barrels and letting them just sit there soaking up all that goodness for a year or so. And then they roast them right there in the barrel room in just outside of Chicago, and they ship it out to you. So make sure you go to store.smugglerscoffee.com and check out some of the delicious brews. I have a few different bags in my cabinet. I hand it out to friends. I drink it regularly. I'm a big fan. And they are a supporter of the Patreon that our show has, patreon.com/rollforpersuasion. If you want to support the show, I appreciate it. $5 a month gets you access to some exclusive content that we'll be getting into here in a minute. It lets you submit questions for my guests. It helps me host the show and kind of cover some of the technical fees. So if you feel like supporting the show, go to patreon.com/rollforpersuasion, join Smuggler's Coffee in helping out this program. And speaking of which, one of my backers did send in a question for you, Lauren. This Ooh. Is from Brady, of my nearest and dearest backers on the show, a good friend online. We chat on Twitter all the time. She says, not RPG related, but what drew you to playing the oboe? What do you like about it compared against single reed woodwinds like clarinet or saxophone?
All right. So the reason I'm an oboist is because in third grade, when we had a chance to pick our instruments, I had a list of instruments I wanted to play, and I wanted to play the French horn. But I was told by the band director, no, you can't play the French horn. You have to play a couple years of trumpet before you can play the French horn. Which, as an adult musician, totally understand. As a third grade child, I was upset. So I said, well, no, I don't want to play that. All right, fine. I won't play the trombone. I thought the trombone was pretty cool. I wanted to be a brass player. I did not want to be an oboist. And so what my band director told me at the time was, oh, you don't want to play the trombone. You have the wrong shaped lips. What I found out later, many, many years later, my last name is Urban. We got to pick our instruments in alphabetical order by your last name. By the time it got to me, you'd run out of trombones. So no, you don't want to play the trombone, Lauren. You'd have the wrong shaped lips.
And right, the unfortunate last name.
Yeah. The unfortunate last name. All right, what's that thing? Oh, that's an oboe. Oh, an oboe, what's that? Well, it's kind of like a clarinet, but it's stranger. And if you play it, you'll be the only one. And I thought that was cool. And that's why I'm an oboist. I've stuck with it because I do love it. I do love the sound. I love the tone. I love the singing quality of it. It is one of those instruments that is integral in the orchestral repertoire, but can still be a group instrument. I feel like it's, for me, just the right amount of solos versus group playing. And yeah, it's just, it is so much of what I love in classical music is being able to sit in the middle of the orchestra, because when you're playing principal oboe, you are right smack dab and you're in the best seat of the house. It's amazing. And being able to play with everybody and have that fine line of my part is super important. If I'm not playing, nobody else is playing this part. However, I am not a soloist at this moment. I am contributing to the group. It's kind of the perfect instrument. Even when I am cursing at my reeds.
I don't have much natural musical talent. I can sing. I noodle on guitar. I've always loved the idea of playing a woodwind. I do not have the temperament or the patience for it. I have a trombone hanging in my closet because I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to play trombone. Let me try that. So I got a trombone.
There you go.
Haven't figured it out yet. But I fell in love with the oboe as a listener thanks to Peter and the Wolf as a kid, where the oboe is, I think it's the duck,
it
if
is.
I remember. Yeah.
Did you listen to the original or did you hear the Disneyfied version?
It was probably the Disneyfied version.
Well, I've got an easy way to find out what happens at the end to the duck. Do you remember?
Oh, the duck dies, right? Or gets eaten?
It does, something? But does the duck, so you remember the duck dying?
Yes, okay. I remember the duck dying.
Then
okay,
you...
so I'm probably not the Disney version.
Exactly, because in the Disney version, yeah. In the animated version, the duck jumps into a hole in a tree, and you watch the wolf snap after it, and then it comes out with like a feather, and you hear the sad music, and then later on, the duck just pokes its head out. It's all fine. I remember as a child, because I was a musician, I knew, I was like, no, you're supposed to, like, it's horrific. Like, the story is that the wolf eats the duck in one gulp, and the duck is still alive in the wolf's stomach.
I see, now I remember that, because I had a big book that came with a cassette tape.
Oh, yeah.
That played along with it. I remember being traumatized to some degree by in one, see, it's all coming back, yeah.
And part of me as an oboist gets super upset when they Disneyfy that stuff, because like that last little bit when the narrator says, you know, if you listen really closely, you can still hear the duck in the wolf's stomach. And then the oboe has this really sad melody. It's playing the duck's melody, but it's all sad and kind of distant and everything. And and then when they Disneyfy it, it loses all of its bite, and people think that's weird.
Well, I think it's a damn shame. And I'm, that's a hill I'm willing to die on.
There was a short time in high school when I was still trying to figure out what I wanted to do for a living. And I was considering becoming an astronaut, but I have horrible, horrible sight. My vision sucks. I have Coke bottle contacts. And Star Trek The Next Generation was on. And my favorite character was Commander Riker.
Okay.
For a variety of reasons, but one of which being he played the trombone. And not just that, but the actor playing him really did play the trombone. And I was always super impressed whenever they would show Riker playing the trombone, because I'm like, he's really playing. That's not like they would show all kinds of the actors playing a variety of instruments. And you could always tell.
Right.
No, he's not actually. I think Data at one point plays the oboe, and it's just. Like, I love you, Brent Spiner, but you're not really playing that oboe, whatever. But then Riker would come out and start playing jazz. I'm like, he's really playing. And so there's a brief moment where I'm like, maybe I'll just switch a trombone like I always wanted to play. I almost did it because of Commander Riker.
This close.
Yep.
Well, so one more music question for you then.
Sure.
Do you have a favorite symphony?
Oh.
Mine is Mahler's Symphony Number 2.
Mahler, really? You go for the big stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if I, like 10 different symphonies went through my head.
You don't even have to say favorite. What's one that you just like, that you're like, oh, you know what? Either that you enjoy playing specifically or just listening to.
Okay. If we're going to go with symphonies, Beethoven 5th. Beethoven 5th is amazing. I love it so much. Do you want me to stick with actual symphonies, or are you okay with me going with other orchestral music?
Branch out, freestyle it, go for it.
Okay. Stravinsky, Igor Stravinsky has a whole bunch of music. I'm kind of stuck on Stravinsky right now, because one of the concerts that I was supposed to play that got canceled because of this virus, we were going to play the Firebird, which I've never had a chance to play professionally before, but I love and I want to play so bad. So hopefully we'll be able to move that. Firebird, I love so much. Beethoven's 9 does have a special place in my heart. It's not the kind of symphony that I will listen to, but I've been lucky enough to play it multiple times, and playing it, once again, I'm fortunate enough to be in like the best place in the entire orchestra for it. And it is a difficult symphony. It is an hour long of, especially for the oboe, almost constant playing, almost constantly being in the spotlight. And it's an emotional journey. I mean, Stravinsky definitely is there. Stravinsky has a jazz. I've just lost it. It's a jazz suite. So I played a ballet a couple of years ago that was a ballet for Pinocchio, and where they all used bits and pieces from the jazz suite from Stravinsky, which is this really eclectic version of a bunch of instruments. It's a couple string players, got like a slide guitar, a bunch of saxophones, trumpet. It's a very different symphony and a different bunch of music, but it's got this bittersweet quality to it, which and it's all like dance music, but not really dance music. It's gorgeous. Definitely go listen to it. Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto, the opening, gives me chills every single time. As soon as the strings come in, piano starts, and there's this gorgeous solo piano opening where they're just playing chords, and then all the strings come in. I'm not even playing, but that moment where the da 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 just gets me every single time.
I can't imagine, like you said, what it sounds like to be in the middle of the orchestra. Right. Like I tried to go a bit more like in college when you could get the really cheap tickets. Haven't been in a while, but sitting in the middle of it, that's just gotta be like sound heaven.
It's not just sound. It's you emotionally feel it. And then you also literally feel it. You know, the low basses come in and the floor rumbles, the brass starts to play and you feel it in your gut. The piccolo hits a high note and it cuts through your brain. And it's a unique experience. Like, I love listening to music, but I would rather play than listen all the time. And there's a whole bunch of composers I will never listen to, but I will play because of the experience of playing. Philip Glass is brilliant. And there's a ton of amazing compositions, both for classical music and as movie scores. I will play Philip Glass in a heartbeat. There's something very almost meditative, especially about his repetition in his music. There's something very, it speaks to me when I'm playing it. I will never listen to it. I can't have the same experience I get when I am forced to participate. And forced as in like I must concentrate and I must think about my own part. But that kind of connection with the other musicians around me and that kind of repetition, it puts me in a very interesting meditative state that I don't get when I'm just listening to it. So, yeah, Philip Glass's stuff all the time playing. It's being there live is something. And I think when you're in the audience, you get that too. I'm lucky that I just get it all the time. And it's impossible to ignore. And sometimes it's not as much fun if it's a piece that I don't enjoy, or if it's something that I'm struggling with, or if I'm having problems with a part and so I'm too much in my own head and so I can't be enjoying the music because I'm too much in my own head, you know, that kind of thing. But most of the time, that experience of playing with others and experiencing it together it's addictive.
Not too dissimilar from a good game of Dungeons and Dragons.
No, absolutely. 100%. It is that human connection with other people when it clicks and when you lose yourself, when you are no longer thinking about the technical side of things, when you're no longer thinking about the dice rolls and the, you know, whatever stuff you're using to stream, or you know, whether you have enough coffee, or you're not thinking about the notes and you're not thinking about your music stand, you're not thinking about any of that, you're just drawn into the moment and all you can think about is the moment to moment. I'm gonna do this and it's gonna elicit this from this person and we're gonna do this together. That is a primal, joyful, amazing moment that I get in both D&D and in classical music in different ways. And 100%, it's addictive.
in the best way.
Absolutely.
That is awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and join me and chat here for a bit. It's been really great.
Thank you. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks for letting me ramble on about a bunch of stuff.
That is the whole point of the show, to enable the ramblings of others. And guys, again, Smuggler's Coffee, thanks to them for supporting the Patreon so that we can do these awesome sections. If you are a Patreon supporter, stick around, because after the outro music here in a minute, Lauren and I are going to be talking about some of our favorite video games and just other cool nerd stuff. So if you are a backer, you get access to that Zone of Truth segment brought to you by Smuggler's Coffee after each and every episode.
Zone of Truth.
I thought it was a dorky and fun game. Yeah.
I'm so excited. The cleric in me is so happy.
So that's what we call it. And we're going to be talking, about all sorts of video games and all the stuff she likes to play. So if you're not a backer, anytime you back, you can always access those old episodes as well. So you can go listen to Adam Bradford talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You can listen to Satine Phoenix talking about Dresden Files. And you can listen to us today talking about video games. So make sure you check that out. Roll for Persuasion. Or sorry, patreon.com/rollforpersuasion. Lauren, if people want to check you out, see what you're involved in, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, you can always come to dndbeyond.com. That is my home on the internet. You can also find me on Twitter. I am Obo Lauren on Twitter. That's where I do most of my social media-ing. We also, at D&D Beyond, have a Discord. Come to our Discord. I hang out there quite a bit. And if you watch me on Wednesdays, you can see me on Beyond Heroes. We play from 2 to 4 Pacific Wednesdays at twitch.tv/dndbeyond. Or if you're interested in my little fun podcast with some of my longtime friends who we've been playing for forever, that's Dungeon Drunks, which you can find wherever fine podcasts are sold.
Very awesome. Well, thank you again for joining me. And let's do it again. And hopefully next time we're supposed to be at a convention, there won't be a virus going around the world and we'll get to hang out and chat in person.
Cheers to that.
Cheers to that. Well, guys, that has been this week's episode of Roll for Persuasion. As always, I'm your host, Andrew Richardson. Make sure you follow the show on social media at Roll Persuasion on Instagram and Twitter. Feel free to hit me up, shoot me a DM. You can email the show, andrew@rollforpersuasion.com. As we said at the beginning, make sure that you subscribe, rate, review, do all the fun podcast things to help us out. And, you know, guys, it's kind of a weird time. I'm not going to lie. The whole Corona thing, it's odd. So just make sure that you are being gentle with yourself, people around you, intentional in the time that you're spending, the people you're reaching out to. But more than anything, guys, make sure that you are enjoying your games. We know that we're enjoying ours, and I look forward to talking to you guys each and every week. Until next time, have a good one.